Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, what's up? This is DeJuan Boyd, a.k.a. DJ Rabbit, representing Rabbit Productions, hanging out chilling with my girl, Cy Buggy. That's right, Cy Brown, right here on LifeRemixedRadio.com. Say word.
Hey, everybody, it's your girl, Cy Brown. Today is Thursday, October 23rd, and we have a really good show today. Well, you know today is Thursday, so DeJuan joins us on Thursday. He has a blog, Ecclesia, ekklesiatl.blogspot.com, and he joins us every Thursday so we can just kind of take a deeper look at the stuff that's going on around us, how it affects us, and how we can all grow spiritually. So I'm very pleased and honored to have him, and we are going to use the entire hour today, nothing else. Dee, are you there? Hold on 1 second. Let me unmute your line. You there?
Yes, ma'am.
I always love when you come in. You're always like, yeah. based on our text messages and tweets that have been going back and forth, and then, of course, the introspective, if that's the right word, conversations that we have, sans being on the show in front of an audience. We had a good conversation yesterday, a really good one that made me go back to the drawing board and that made me go back to, what do I believe and why do I believe it? Last week when you were with us, we talked about the absence of time, which blew me away, but I'm really proud to say I'm getting better and I'm starting to understand it. Talk to me about what we're going to talk about today. I opened up the show early so we don't miss any time, no commentary, and I already see people popping up in the chat room. What's up, Pastor? How are you? I see you in the chat room. Dee, the floor is yours, and I'm here to add and question, and the chat room is open. Everybody get ready to chat away because I will post the chat room on the blog. I'll have to clean it up a little bit, but let's make it happen. We have 58 more minutes, 57 more minutes, and I want to enjoy every second of it. Go. No.
Well, yeah, first of all, I want to thank you for having me on the show. I want to thank all the listeners and everybody that's in the chat room that's checking us out. I thank God that we don't have any technical difficulty jumping off this time. So I praise God for that. Basically, God willing, what I would like to be able to do this time is kind of, obviously we're in the midst of an election cycle, and one of the biggest constituents out there is the Christian voter bloc. So I wanted to kind of juxtapose the idea of Christians and how they should vote or whom they should vote for in reference to, obviously, the church and its early inception and merits to that political system from its inception, and how does it all relate together. So that's where I'd like to be able to dibble and dab in today.
Well, I'm excited, and one of the things that I said to you is that, and I'm speaking specifically, not speaking for you, but speaking specifically of black or like gospel Christians. I don't know how to say it tactfully. That I don't understand how, just as a black community, or as a people collective of people, can go to church and attend regular church services on Sunday, but yet still vote Democrat as a Democrat, because the Democrats, I believe, don't fall in line with Christian values such as abortion, gay marriage, and just a host of other things. Those are the first two that pop into my head right now. And that confuses me. It's like, how can we say, as a Christian, and we believe in Jesus Christ and salvation and deliverance, but yet vote for and put people in position to make laws for our lands that believe in a woman's right to terminate a pregnancy, that believe that same-sex marriages are okay, That confuses me. So how do we, in large numbers, proclaim to be Christians and followers of the teachings of Jesus Christ, but yet vote for those things that are a direct and blatant contradiction to our belief?
Okay, that's a great opening question. First of all, what you got to understand is, being a Christian, Christ repeatedly said his kingdom was not of this world. That was one of the big problems why they wanted to crucify him, because when he came on the scene, the Jews of that time were under Roman oppression, and they thought the Messiah, the coming king, Christ, was going to overthrow the Roman government and put them in power. So it was all for Christ when he came to Jerusalem during Palm Sunday. But when they really realized he was not interested in politics, not in a worldly, earthly sense, they wanted to crucify him. So, first of all, what we got to understand that the kingdom of heaven, or the reign of the heavens, as Christians, it says, you know, we're not neither Jew or Gentile, male nor female. Our allegiances are not to a world mainstream system. Christianity is not inherent with any either party, neither Democrat or Republican. It's a tragic misnomer that people have. They equate Christianity with the Republican Party just because they espouse certain aspects of, you know, traditional Christian values and put that a part of their platform. But the Bible always tells you to judge a tree by its fruit. You don't go by what people say, you go by what they do. And the reality is, when you had 8 years of a Republican conservative Christian president with a Republican House and a Republican Senate, and you had previously before that, you had 4 years of Bush Senior, and then you had 8 years of Reagan, you had a pretty much constant Republican conservative Christian reign in politics in this country, with the exception of the eight years of Clinton. And especially when you look at the last 8 years with all this people, you know, what really confused me was countless Christians that I know that the only reason why they voted for Bush is because of the platform of abortion and homosexuality. But the reality is, with a Republican Christian president, as far as his emissions goes, and Republican Congress and Senate, they didn't overturn Roe v. Wade. And under 8 years, actually states and homosexual agenda and rights actually progressed. Two states actually got, you know, gay marriage passed. So that tells me they really don't believe in those platforms. That's just something that people say, and Christians get all scared and be like, I'm going to vote Republican because they're going to actually, you know, rule by the Bible, when obviously the fruit is they haven't. They haven't done anything different than liberals. And I would submit to you that at least liberals actually believe in pro-choice, and they actually believe in homosexual rights. Republicans don't believe in anything, because you can have a Governor Palin that is an ardent, staunch person that is totally against abortion, but at the same time she will parade her daughter, an unwed boyfriend, on stage, engaged in premarital sex and fornication, and she don't have a problem with that. She can work with that sin, but the sin of abortion and homosexuality, you know, we don't tolerate. And all you have to do is Google all the countless numbers of other sins that the Republican leaders in office that are quote-unquote Christian have engaged in over the last couple of years, and there are very many. So I think to vote solely on the basis of two things that the Bible deems as sin, abortion and homosexuality, and disregard all the other things that people are engaged in or do, is very narrow and very short-sighted, and you're basically drinking the Kool-Aid when you do that. And they bank on that. They hope that the Christian voting bloc will go out and vote based on two ideals that they don't even believe in, that they're never going to change. And then people will say, well, DeJuan, if you lit you got to vote Republican because they're going to put conservative judges on the bench, and the judges are going to determine what the laws are going to be. So we got to vote for them in that regard. Well, at the end of the day, you really can't legislate morality. I go back to the book of Genesis. God knew Cain was about to kill Abel. He was about to commit murder. He didn't legislate it. He didn't say, you know, I'm going to prevent Cain from killing Abel. No, he told Cain, look, I know what you're about to do. If you do right, you'll be accepted. But if you don't, the devil is waiting on the door to get you. And then, obviously, Cain went and killed Abel, and he committed murder, no different than the murders that's committed by abortion. So the fact that God gave Cain and us and people the free will to do evil like they want to do, I don't believe that's something that you can go out and legislate. Now, you know, if you're a Christian and you're in office, obviously you're not going to vote for it and put it in the legislation, but I don't think that's where we're headed. So at the end of the day, the Bible tells us to pray for our leaders. In Paul's day and the disciples' day, their leaders were Caesar and Nero and people that were killing Christians and persecuting Christians and doing all manners of evil, but yet they prayed for them. And the Bible says that, you know, God controls the hearts of kings. So it, for me as a Christian, it doesn't matter if it's Republican, Democratic, Independent, Obama, McCain, or if it's Wonder Dog runs for president. It doesn't matter. You know, whoever God elevates, because it says God elevates leaders and he sits down leaders. Ultimately, his will is to be done. So I'm not going to vote solely on the pretext of two sins that they trump out there and they forget the other eight commandments that are out there. So, I mean, that's my explanation on that particular question, I guess, if that makes sense.
No, it makes perfect sense. Just in the chat room, it says the church tried to legislate morality through Rome. Hold on, just reading what else. Oh, okay. Yeah, the church tried to legislate morality through Rome. Well, I think it's worth mentioning, isn't that what the Conservative Party is trying to do, legislate morality when they appoint conservatives to the bench?
Well, yeah, I mean, what you got to do, what's going on today, the Bible says nothing new under the sun. When you go to the early inception of the quote-unquote assembly or what we call church, after Christ died, you know, God, you know, Christ didn't go around start churches. What you had during his day, you had Sadducees that, you know, that operated in the, quote, temple, because they still had the temple in Jerusalem, and they would go in there and do all the sacrifices that we've talked about on previous shows. And then you had the Pharisees that taught in the synagogues, which would be comparable to our churches on the corner. And as the Pharisees died out after 70 AD, after the temple was destroyed, you had the Pharisees operating in synagogues. And then when Constantine, the Roman emperor, came on the scene, and he was looking to unify Rome and unify power, he understood that the best way to control people is through religion, because everywhere they would go, they would conquer people and make people serve their gods. But in the case of Christianity and Judaism, they really didn't have a handle on that. So that's when he came up with the idea of merging the church and state, and he called the Council of Nicene in 325 AD, with about 300 bishops came together of these various synagogues. And they decided what would be and what wouldn't be Christian doctrine. And it was a marriage of the church and the state. And ever since then, there's been this idea that a certain party or a certain branch or that government can influence or legislate morality. But that was never intended from the beginning by Christ. Christ never intended for his body of believers, his assembly, to be married to any political party or be merged with the state. It's totally a heresy. So therefore, we are where we are right now, where we have you know, well-meaning preachers, I guess, if I'm just giving them the benefit of the doubt, that go around here and try to merge politics with spirituality and try to legislate from the White House. And clearly, Christ reiterated over and over again, his kingdom is not of this world. He doesn't have to do that. That's not something he's trying to do. So when you do that, you do what Constantine did. What did Constantine do? He actually merged paganism and the tenets of Christianity together. He kept all the gods of Rome and the Greek gods and all that system that was based on Babylonian deities, which Babylonian deities was based on Egyptian deities. He kept that whole system together and merged it with Christianity so that he could merge his empire and be in control. And that's what we have today in our churches. It's a merger of a lot of things we practice and believe in church are still mergers of pagan origins. Just like one of the most important things they did, Constantine did, was make sure that they legislated Easter and determined that Easter had to be celebrated on Sunday because he knew that the majority of the world at that time was pagan and they worshiped the sun god, and whether the sun god was Mithras or if you take it back to Egyptian times with Osiris, that was a constant that we're going to worship the sun. So he kept that and made sure Easter fell on Sunday, and Christianity bought into it. And because they bought into the system, what did Constantine do? He said, if you bishops accept my system of church, I will give you land free of taxes, and the church won't have to pay taxes. Well, that was a long, you know, thousands of years ago, and we still have that system now, which is 501c3 churches that get land and they don't have to pay taxes as long as they go along with what the government is instituting.
Right, but okay, now let's look at it from a perspective of modern day time. Don't you think the modern day church has to adapt to where we live now because we're not living in the times of Constantine and the Pharisees and things like that? Don't they have to adapt modern-day MOs, you know, ways of operating just to keep current? Or should they bring all of the traditions from the past forward, such as the church not paying taxes and things like that? Or maybe it doesn't have to be absolute.
Well, the thing is, the Bible says you don't forsake the old past. There were tenets that were established of a way that a congregation or Christ assembly is supposed to operate that really supersedes any of these MOs or modern techniques that we borrow. I think one of the critical heresies that we have is, in its simplest form, Christ is the head of his quote-unquote assembly, congregation, church, and our job as ambassadors, as kings and priests, is to carry out his commands, his will on earth in whatever capacity that we are blessed to operate in, whether we are radio show host, basketball player, garbage man, technician, teacher, whatever it is, we are supposed to be the light of Christ in that vocation. And when we come together once a week, twice a week, or however we come together in a congregation or a fellowship, our goal is to enlighten each other, help each other, so that those people are able to live up to their title as a king and priest and go out and be a witness to the gospel. That's it. Now, when we have added all this other stuff, quote-unquote modern trappings to the ecclesia concept, to the congregational concept, it gets warped, distorted, and then it's no longer operating as Christ intended. When we try to bring in corporate mindsets and corporate ideas to the congregation and say, hey, we have to, you know, incorporate and we have to raise money and do this and do that in order to maintain a ministry, well, the concept of the assembly was never intended to do that. So therefore, if it was never intended to do that, you don't have to incorporate to raise money to do all these things that we think we have to have in order to facilitate having a worship service. Really, you know, all the things that a lot of these things we add is not really for the benefit of the gospel, because you you know, studies and statistics show that over 80% of the budgets that are raised by churches don't even go to charitable work. Less than 20% go to charitable work. 80% goes to the maintaining of the building and the staff and all of that. And all that has to do with the man or woman that's in charge. That has nothing to do with God. Or, you
speak
know,
to that real quick. Can I speak
yeah.
to that real quick? I'm from the AME denomination, which, you know, for what it's worth, I'm putting it out there. And I went to visit my grandmother last night, and she said, you know what? The church's phone is off. And I looked my grandmother right in the face, and y'all have heard me say many a time that my great-grandparents were involved with the development of this particular church in our town. So their names are on pews, and, you know, just, you know, I'm the fourth generation to come through that. My children are the fifth generation to come through that. The point is, and I looked my grandmother right in the face, and I said, that's why I left that church 2 years ago, because this is not the first time our church – the phones for the church have been disconnected. And what is very frustrating is because all the money that comes in to our church has to be sent to the district. Not all of it, but a good chunk of it, because you have to pay dues. Dues to be able to be part of this larger network. And so now what happens is our church is doing fundraisers, bake sales, cake sales, sending this money over to our district, which goes to our district manager, for a better term. It's called the presiding elder. And then it goes to our bishop, who has health insurance, this and that, and this and that. And yet our church that we're going to faithfully can't even keep the phones on. And that's my frustration. That's why I said I left. And I did leave 2 years ago, because they told me, as the youth director, I need to raise money for the young people. And I'm thinking, good, I can take my young people somewhere. She said, no, we needed to pay our dues. And that's when I left. I said, I'm not pimping my young people to put it in the bishop and elders' pockets. That I will not do, and I relinquish my position as youth director.
Well, I mean, what that whole system goes back to what Constantine set up. It's just a, you know, a derivative of the Roman Catholic system, where you have a hierarchy of churches and leaders, and they have to, you know, send their money up through the different systems. That was never intended by Christ. That was not the plan. You know, when you study the letters in the Bible, Ephesians, Corinthians, Colossians, all these letters were to individual assemblies in different areas, and they were independent, but at the same time interdependent. You know, Paul encouraged them to help each other, help support each other, but at the same time they weren't beholding these organizations, these individual fellowships weren't, you know, beholden to either one. So I think, you know, that's part of the man-made system that's happened, to where they've instituted these mechanisms in order to support a bigger system, whether it's Catholic, AME, Baptist, whatever denomination you want to call it. It's a bigger system that 9 times out of 10 or 10 times out of 10 is still tied back into the state, whether it's the Roman state or American state, what have you. It's still a marriage of spiritual, Christ-centered ideology and paganism, because any government, you know, most all the governments are secular mainstream governments based on a lot of pagan foundation. So it's still that same situation where you're trying to marry the things of God with worldly things, and you can't do that.
No, yeah, I was just saying, I was agreeing with you. I want to bring us a little bit more into modern times, to even go back to the premise of today's show, going back to how it relates to politics. I hate to keep harping on the same thing, but I really want us, you know, and I'm pretending, Dee, that this is one of our conversations and that we just have all these people listening in on our conversation. I want to go back to how we're supposed to move forward in either an Obama or McCain presidency. And I don't want you to think I wasn't listening, because I do believe you said it shouldn't matter either way. because we're not, as a Christian, we're not supposed to operate under either system. But the pragmatic approach is that one of them is going to be president. Should we totally live oblivious to whatever policies and legislation they put in place and just say, well, I'm not of this system, so it doesn't affect me like the Jehovah's Witnesses do?
No, because what did Christ say when they came to him, said Caesar said you all need to pay taxes? And he said, well, render unto Caesar what is Caesar. So he was cognizant of the system he was involved in, but the system didn't have jurisdiction over everything, even his faith. I mean, you know, it didn't matter one way or another who was the next Caesar of Rome. You know, Christ did what he did, and the disciples did what he did, because ultimately, you know, God and the earth and the fullness of the earth is controlled by God. So it's not that you're oblivious to it, and you do participate in it. You know, you look at the candidates as a whole, as an entirety, not just pick out two things like abortion and homosexuality and then ignore everything else. You look at everything in entirety, and then between you and God, you make your own choice, cast your ballot. If they win, they win. They don't. Oh, but still, what happens is it shouldn't make you feel like your life is going to be worse or better one way or another. Because if you go back to when God's people were under Pharaoh, I mean, they still prospered anyway, regardless of what Pharaoh was in office anyway. It didn't matter. So, I mean, that's what you have to have your faith in Christ and believe in him and not be caught up in these systems. So it is totally an oxymoron to be a Christian and be a Republican and then be depressed because a liberal Democrat takes office, as if God was surprised and shocked, and now he's not going to be able to operate and get his will done with a liberal Democrat in office. That's just totally moronic. So you got to pull back a little bit and not. I mean, if your trust and hope is in the systems of the world and who's in power, then. I mean, a good case in point is King Nebuchadnezzar. He was a ruler of Babylon when the Jews were in captivity. And he was a pagan king. He worshipped other gods, and he did all of that. But God said, I'm going to still use this liberal pagan leader to do my will. So while in the midst of Nebuchadnezzar was having one of his big, you know, orgies and all type of stuff was going on, it was handwriting on the wall, and from there he went crazy. And he went through a whole season where he was, like, outside of his kingdom. And God brought him to his senses and said, you're going to do my work. I don't care if you're a pagan or not. I want you to help facilitate the children of Israel to rebuild the temple. So when he came back to his right mind, he allowed the children of Israel to rebuild the temple, and he helped fund it. And this was he still worshiped other gods. He still did his thing, but God still used Nebuchadnezzar to do what he wanted to do. So it just shows you it doesn't matter who's in office, and if they could be the most liberal, what have you, it's irrelevant. If God's will is going to God's will is going to be done regardless. So you can't equate God with a party. That's just totally nonsense, but people do it every day.
Yeah, they do it, and they use it to advance, their own political platform, because that's what people relate to. I know people who said, I voted for George Bush because he's against abortion.
Okay, well, is George Bush against killing people and capital punishment and all that? I mean, that's also could be, you know, interpreted as a sin. And, you know, so you can't act like the Bible is a buffet and, you know, pick and choose what you're going to execute and what you're not. And then, you know, it's just so easy to highlight abortion and so easy to highlight homosexuality as one form of sex, when God says don't fornicate, period, whether it's homosexual, sexual relations, or heterosexual. You're not supposed to do either one, but we kind of try to differentiate which one we're going to, you know, legislate and make cast our ballots based on that. And then we go, and then if you get all technical with it, you know, this is the same thing that the Pharisees and the Sadducees did with Christ. They came to Christ and said, okay, we caught somebody in adultery. She's wrong. Kill her. But then, you know, Christ was like, well, if you even think about doing it in your heart, you're just as wrong as the person that actually does it. So if you put that type of standard benchmark, then you would have to say if you use the pill or any type of contraceptive, you're committing abortion. But, you know, hey, we ain't going to do that. You know,
right.
we only want to just, you know, execute things on a surface level. But, I try to keep it real.
Yeah, and you know what, D, when I look at this, it makes me frustrated. I got to get a deeper vocabulary because frustrated probably is not the best word. But it baffles me, I guess I could say, about this, how I watch and I can almost see the devil dancing in the screen. I watched John McCain, and so please be careful about me drawing a correlation between John McCain. But if you watch the last debate, please go back and watch it if you can. The way his tongue almost slithered in and out of his mouth. And I never had a problem with John McCain up until this presidential season because I do believe he was kind of on his own and whatever he believed whether he went along with party lines or not. But watching him, I swear to you guys, I'm not nuts. If you can go back and watch, go to youtube.com/BarackObama.com, all spelled out. I'm sure they'll have the last presidential debate. And if you just watch McCain, it's as if he was trying to, it just scares me and creeps me out just watching him. Is that because I have a heightened sense of reality or a heightened sense of spirituality, or is it me just pulling stuff out of the air?
Well, I'm not going to say that, but what I will say about McCain is the fact that if you paid attention to that last debate, he unequivocally did not denounce abortion. He's like, yeah, I'm against abortion, but I don't think we should change the legislation right now because that will cause women to be doing a whole bunch of illegal abortions, and we can't do that right now, so it should be progressive. Well, either you're against something or you're not. Either God is like, Noah, you need to build this ark and you all get in it because I'm totally against everything that's going on right now. But there's no such thing as this progressive or progressing where, okay, I'm just a starch ardent, I'm against abortion, but I'm not going to get rid of it right now because of the ramifications of it. So that tells me, you know, like I said before, they don't really believe in it. Because if you really believe in something, it's just like they said when we were fighting for our rights. They said, give me freedom or give me death. I want the freedom right now. I don't want progressive freedom. I don't want you to ration freedom out to me over the course of years. We need to get emancipated immediately, ASAP. So if you really believe in that whole context of abortion, which I don't believe they really believe in it, then they would be really trying to do something about it, overturn Roe v. Wade immediately. He would say, I will overturn Roe v. Wade the first day I get in office, January 21st. But they're not going to do that because they don't really believe in it. But on the same time, I'm not up here as someone that's an Obama fan. I'm not an Obama fan either. I mean,
can we talk about that too?
Huh?
I want us to talk about that too before we get off the air today.
Okay. Well, I mean, as far as Obama, I guess I go into it at this particular point. I mean, I think he presents opportunities. I think what Obama is to me is like the lottery. You know, you hope you win the lottery because that hope, in quotations, you know if you win the lottery that it will change your life, with change in quotation. And the reason why I say that, there's just, it's so ambiguous what that change is going to be, and so many people draw from their own expectations and their own experiences and try to, you know, superimpose their ideas of hope and change onto Obama's old ideas of hope and change. And I think there's a disconnect. I don't believe that Obama is just going to do that magic wand, you know, change that we think is going to happen, just like the Wizard of Oz in the beginning of the movie. Dorothy's walking around and it's in black and white, and all of a sudden she gets to Land of Oz and it turns color. I mean, Obama's not going to do that once he gets in the White House. It's just not reality. From my experience, when I look at Obama, it's like when I'm growing up in the 70s. And in the 70s, it was just such, you just hope to see somebody black on TV. You know, even though the Jeffersons, George Jefferson was acting a fool, at least he owned his own business. They moved up to the east side. They had a penthouse in the sky. That was positive. Now, did that really affect my life in Alabama growing up? Did that really mean anything to me? Did it? Incrementally over time, it affected me, but in the short term, it doesn't. So I think by having Obama or African American face in the White House, on the surface, just having that positive outlook over time, incrementally, it helps us out. And for those people that are able to take advantage of him being in there and whatever connections you can get, it'll help you out. But I just don't believe it's going to be this incredible whirlwind of change that people are just all geeked up about and just hysteria that, you know, somehow having an African-American president, what that's just going to just, you know, it's like getting reparations. I just don't believe that.
Well, again, this, we kind of touched on this. I beg to differ. And originally, let me just state my premise so everybody knows the direction from which I'm from which I'm coming from. I was very cynical of Barack Obama, and I said I think everybody is drinking Barack Obama's Kool-Aid or whatever it is. They're all tap dancing behind Barack Obama, and he is just a more his finesse hides his dubious intentions. I think that's a good way for me to put it, that I didn't trust him. I was extremely cynical and said he's bogus too. But I was only voting for him because I really didn't want McCain to win and Hillary didn't make it. But the more I look at Barack and the more I study him, I really believe that he can bring about the change that he talks about, and let me give you one quick example. Just campaign finance, and this is the one that I shared with you, Z. A lot of people are either for or against campaign finance regulation, or public. Let me preface it by saying public. They both said we'll accept public money for our campaigns to run, and there's like an $84 million cap or something like that. And they both agreed. Barack Obama is now funded, he said, now I don't want the money because he saw he can raise more money on his own without, you know, getting money, you know, without public campaign financing. Not only did he change his position, but now he's kind of throwing back at all the Democratic leadership, nah, 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 look what I have. And I was saying, well, that's not a good person. But then when you really look at it, he is reforming the whole campaign finance laws by his actions. He's not using public money to like through campaign finance regulation. He's using it directly, going to the people, getting the money from them, and not using the coffers that have already been set aside. So I hope I made sense the way I tried to explain it, but what I'm saying is this. He seeks to reform how campaigns are financed, and he's reforming it through his actions, not anything that he can possibly say out of his mouth. Did everybody get that? Let me know in the chat room. If not, I'll clarify it.
Well, I understand what you're saying, but this is my first of all, I'm not saying I'm not going to vote for Obama. I don't like Obama or none of that. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm looking at it through the lens of reality and being a realist. When I look at all the accolades and the hype and hysteria being placed on Obama, it's like people compare him to Martin Luther King and all these other people. And that you can't do that simply because you're talking about Harriet Tubman or Sojourner Truth or Frederick Douglass or Martin Luther King or Malcolm X, you could look at these people and see something that they definitively did that benefited everybody. You look at Martin Luther King. He did all these marches and protests, and it built up to a point where they got the Civil Rights Act passed, and that piece of legislation benefited everybody from the poorest to the wealthiest, regardless of race, class, or creed. You can look and see that what Martin Luther King did actually benefited. You can go through our history and you'll see different leaders that actually did things that you can definitively say, okay, they did this. With Barack Obama, there's nothing substantive that he done that you could say, well, because Barack did this, I know he's going to, and it affected and benefited all these people, he's going to do this in the White House. Now there's a great hope and a great expectation that, you know, he may do these great things, but you can't put him in the same light as a Martin Luther King or in some of these other leaders because he hasn't done those things yet. He hasn't done that transformative act yet that benefits all people. And then when you look at, you know, one of the things I don't like about McCain and Palin is that they don't have the ability to critically analyze concepts and ideas and understand that when you are president or vice president or a leader, civic leader, you can't make choices in a vacuum. Everything it has a symbiotic relationship. Everything that any choice you make affects other choices. You just can't say, I'm going to put a freeze on all government spending. Well, if you put a freeze on all government spending like McCain said he would, then that tells me you're not going to fix healthcare, education. You're not going to invest in AIDS research. You know, you have to draw the correlations when you make one choice. Just like when Obama says, I'm going to place fines on all our American companies that are going overseas and employing cheap labor so that we can bring our jobs back home to the U.S. Well, everybody shouts and they applaud and they be like, yeah, yeah, yeah. See, they don't understand the fact that we're losing jobs overseas because our corporations are employing cheap labor. That's not the cause. That's the effect. And you have to understand the mechanisms of legislation to understand whether a promise of a policy change is actually reality. So when Barack says, I'm fine, our companies that go overseas that employ cheap labor, what is going to be the ramifications of that? What happens is, first of all, you got to understand the reason why we passed NAFTA and all these other free trade agreements, one of the benefits of it that's inherent of those agreements is that it allows corporations to exploit cheap labor overseas without incurring fines. So you penalize American companies and tell them you can't use cheap labor. What does that do in the marketplace in the grand scheme of things? Well, if I'm an American company and I have to compete against European and Chinese companies in a particular industry who are still using cheap labor, they therefore can reduce their production costs. And by reducing their production costs because of cheaper labor, they can put out a product that's the same as mine, but they could charge less for it because their costs are lower. So when they do that, I, as an American company that has to hire American people because Barack Obama said he's going to place fines on me, now I'm at a competitive disadvantage. So now I'm going to lose market share because American people are going to buy the deal. They're just not going to buy American. So when that American company that was forced to have to not exploit cheap labor loses market share, they become at a competitive disadvantage. They're going to end up having to lay off those workers that they were forced to hire because they're not going to be able to compete in the marketplace because in a global economy, over time, products become more and more commoditized to where the only differentiator is the price. So when you just go out there and say you're going to just find people who exploit labor, that's misleading to people because that's not a reality. And for him to do that, to repeal all these free trade agreements that we have in the works, he would have to put a stop to the global economy. We have a global economy with emerging markets in China, India, and now South America, where it's all predicated on the fact that we're going to be able to, corporations are not going to be they're not going to get fined, they're not going to be having tariffs, they can compete, you know, straight up. And he would have to overturn all of that, which he's not going to be able to do. They're not going, we're not going to reverse the global economy, and especially in order for that to work, all the countries across the world would have to agree to not exploit cheap labor for it to become a benefit for American companies. Otherwise, American companies would be at a disadvantage. So that's just one point. So when you look at the different promises either candidate makes, you got to look at the mechanics of how it's going to work, and then you can see if it's plausible or not, and then you can say, well, that's really changed. They could really do that. But that one, you know, piece of legislation that he said he was going to do about, you know, forcing people not to go abroad overseas is not reality. It sounds good. It makes people shout and stand up, be like, yeah, but he's really not going to be able to do that because we have progressed so far in our economic industry. It's just like saying, well, people who own horse and carriage businesses, they can't compete anymore because you got Ford, GM, BMW, Mercedes. So now we're going to have to stop letting them build cars so that the horse and carriage businesses can compete. Well, you know, we're not going to do that. We're not going to, you know, stop progress. So that's just one point. And I just think with both candidates, you know, you got to look at what they promise and then look at the plausibility. Based on all the factors in the world, is it something that's really going to happen or not?
Oh, wow. Let me read you just some of the stuff that's going on in the chat room right now. Just real quick, we're talking, there's a lot of dialogue happening right now between Bill Ayers and Barack Obama. And Biomed said, you know, Ayers believed that the bombing that he and his wife did was right and that voting for Barack Obama scares her. So Hal Elegant said, yes, yet no one spoke about him until his, quote, relationship with Obama. Think about it. Is that all he has? Doesn't that make him look like a terrorist with the name Hussein? So Biomed says, yeah, but it scares me. And I just put, I love this open discourse. And I also put, but Ayers said he believed it at that time. And she says, but Cy, Ayers still believes this. I don't think so. From what I understand, this guy is like this upstanding citizen and a professor in Chicago now. And if, in fact, Ayers was such a bad person and a terrorist, why did nobody hear about him until his affiliation with Barack Obama came up? Was he on the terrorist watch list and we just didn't know? That's why I believe people that don't want Barack Obama in office are going to start pulling stuff from every possible nook and cranny they can, be it right or be it wrong. A lot of this stuff is nonsense. What's your take on that?
Well, I agree with you. I feel like if Ayers was such a threat to our country, he would be in Guantanamo Bay with everybody else. So
exactly.
I just think it's fabricated. I mean, if he is this much of a threat, you could take Obama out of the equation. Just look at him. If he's that much of a threat, then he shouldn't be doing whatever he is, walking the streets with freedom. So the fact that he still is and still will be and they're not going to do anything about it just tells you that it's just fabricated. It's just nonsense. I mean, you just can't, you know, get persuaded by things like that.
Well, you know what? I look at it, and I'm sick of Elizabeth Hasselbeck on The View and saying how Barack Obama's with terrorists and he's in the living room of this person. And I think the Republicans are coming to a gunfight with a pocket knife. I think, and I do think, and you guys can argue me on this, I do think Barack Obama has the media in his pocket, because there is such a love fest with Barack Obama. I watched Chuck Todd yesterday on Chris Matthews on MSNBC say how in an interview with McCain and Palin that was conducted by Brian Williams, he made a comment and said it just, they didn't even have good chemistry. Do you know today in the blog on NBC he had to print a virtual retraction for his statement just by making a comment? Like, I don't know if it's because Chuck Todd is the political director of NBC and his word carries weight, but what power made him go back and retract a comment? I mean, he's the political director. He doesn't have liberty to pass an opinion. I do think the media is definitely in the pocket or the hands of Barack Obama, because nobody comes out to say anything against him. And it's not even to go against him as a person or as a candidate. It's really just to critically analyze Barack Obama. And that's originally what turned me off from him, because it seemed like they felt, well, if we say anything negative, it's going to be perceived as racist, so they give him a pass. And I do agree with the Clintons on that note, because I believe that the media has really given Barack Obama a free ride.
I guess it depends on what network. I would say MSNBC is more unbiased, but they seem to be pro-Obama. CNN is, you know, they were more Clinton and more... They seem to be a little more in the middle. Obviously, Fox is Republican all day, every day. So I don't think the media is all the way in his pocket, even though you got, I think, like 108 newspapers that have endorsed Barack Obama. So,
see, it's not even just 108 of them. It's the reach that these publications have. Do you see what I'm saying? If you have 500 papers endorsed Barack that have 10 readers each, or you have 1,000 that have 10 readers, do you see what I'm saying? Let me give a better analogy. If you have 10 papers with 10 readers endorsed Barack Obama, he can say, I've got 10 endorsements. But Barack... Or you can have 5 newspapers that have 100 readers each. Do you see what I'm saying? It's not the number of outlets. It's the reach that each outlet has. And that's the thing about Barack. The media outlets that have endorsed him are huge media outlets. We're not talking about the Bucks County Milwaukee Gazette. And they're very influential in shaping opinion.
On that note, I'll leave on this with you all with this. As somebody that's been on this earth for 36 years, I don't believe that Barack Obama fully is being elevated and pushed out here just because he's qualified and he's articulate and he has a plan for hope and change. I just don't believe that. Nobody, when you look at our history in this country, any of our authentic leaders that came from the people, whether it's MLK, X, or whomever, they didn't have this type of conglomerate of support, especially not monetary support. And whenever they got to critical mass, they would get assassinated. So I just don't believe Barack Obama is of that cloth. I think there's something else that's propelling him to the forefront. There's other things going on there that is putting him where he is to do whatever bidding he is supposed to do. So, I mean, I just don't believe that there's a whole, like you said, you know, there's not a lot of critical analysis on his record, what he's done and what his plans are. And when you look at it, it's just like, you know, everybody is, you know, hype about the possibilities or the potential, and I've never seen that before, especially when you're African American in this country. You have to have not just hype or potential, but you have to actually do so much in order to get levels of achievement, and not saying that he hasn't done a lot and he's not qualified or none of that, but it just seems very unprecedented for him to get the level of support when I can juxtapose him versus the type of support that Martin Luther King got and Malcolm X got and many of our other leaders and civic groups. You know, they had to go through a lot of opposition, and they had to, you know, really do a whole lot over the course of time to be able to bring that substantive change that everybody is longing for.
Well, we're winding down the show, but I have to comment on something that's in the thanks, True. I see the time. I have to comment on something that Biomed Byline just put in the chat room, and you know, everybody, we say everything love and respect on this show, but her quote is, McCain is definitely more ready, and Palin has run the largest USA state in the Alaskan National Guard. Are you serious? Okay, this is when we start to split hairs. Yes, she has run the largest state in the United States, but it has the same amount of people, the population of like Utah. So let's not split hairs here, because geographically and physically, it is the largest state. But population-wise, come on. There's probably more people in New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut tri-state area that live in Alaska. This is the stuff that frustrates me. When people say, and again, I say this in respect and love, she runs the largest country. Are you nuts? And that Barack Obama, and that she's run the Alaska National Guard. Look at the campaign that Barack Obama is running. If anybody ever wants to question if he's qualified, look at the campaign that he has tirelessly run over the last 20 months. Whether you like him or whether you don't, take a look at what he's able to accomplish. Running a campaign in all of these states with all of this money, and he's still coming out on top. That speaks a lot for me, and I don't think Sarah Palin, who doesn't even know what the vice president's role is ready to be vice president. She just said that the vice president presides over the Senate, and if you look in the Constitution, it does not. The vice president can break a tie if, in fact, there is a tie between the Senate and the House of Representatives. Additionally, that is not the role of the vice president. They do not engage in policy, and she said this 2 days ago. And I found on YouTube four times where she has screwed up the role of what the vice president does. So I'm sorry, my rant. Sorry.
I have to address that
in the chat room.
Well, yeah, that's a critical point, because that says all you need to say. Who in their right mind goes on a job interview or applies for a job and doesn't even know the job, don't even know the description of the job? How do you are just so oblivious and just so serendipitous to just be like, oh, okay, I'll be VP, and have no idea what that is, and just be boldly and go out and just pontificate all the things that you're going to do, and you don't even know what your job is, and yet millions of people flock to you and agree with you and think that you have the capabilities to run a country. I mean, when she was mayor in Alaska, she was a mayor of a town that was about 5,000 people. Well, I was a SGA president in college of about the same number of people. So does that mean I'm qualified to be president? No. So you just can't get caught up in the semantics of, you know, what she's done, because, you know, you have to compare it to reality. Her reality is just, it's just not that good.
Let me say this, and I'm actually just extending the show a couple of minutes. Let me say something. I heard one of the pundits say yesterday that, oh, she was trying to explain it to the level of a third grader. Well, let me put it this way. If, for example, I was explaining how a baby is made and a baby is produced to adults, I would be graphic and say, well, the penis is inserted into the vagina. However, if I'm explaining that to a third grader, I'm going to use the same language but tone down. Well, a mommy and a daddy, they really love each other. They really care for each other. I'm not going to say the stork brings the baby. because that's now an untruth. And I can't use me offering a fallacy to a child based on the fact that it's a child. And that was the excuse that she gave. Everybody, all of her surrogates are saying, well, she was explaining it to a third grader. Well, you take the truth, you add a little water to their level of understanding. You don't give them untruths. And it's scary that she cannot say with clarity and looking off into the sky what a vice president is supposed to do.
Well, it's like we said at the beginning of this show, unfortunately, a lot of Republicans, conservative Christians, they don't believe the things that they espouse. So therefore, they'll come up with every excuse in the world why they do what they do. Because if Michelle Obama had five kids and went to the convention and her oldest daughter had was having a kid out of wedlock, it would be an entirely different story. But because it's Sarah Palin, and she's, you know, Republican and she's a Christian, they just change the standards. And if they, you know, if they really believe the standards that they preach, she never would have took her daughter and boyfriend to the convention and paraded them around, because she would have been like, well, you know, I can't celebrate what they're doing because obviously I'm a Christian and they're fornicating and they're not married. So, you know, it's a family matter. We're going to keep it private and we'll deal with it. But, you know, that's why they're not here today. But, you know, obviously the standard changes when it's a conservative Republican Christian. That's why I say they don't believe in anything. It's whatever fits at the moment to keep doing whatever it is they're doing.
Well, look at George Bush's daughter, Jenna. When she became an alcoholic and she started drinking the way she was drinking, you know what they did? They sent her to Africa on a mission. You know, oh, she's, you know, going to write a book and all this. They put her away somewhere because she was an alcoholic and she had problems. And this is documented. This is not me just going off on a tangent saying Bush's daughter's an alcoholic. But it's the same thing. She could have tactfully said, listen, the same way in the church we get, quote, unquote, sat down. They could have said, you know, you sit your tail right here, and I'll be back for you. And I think them parading her around speaks directly to the fact that they say one thing and do another. And if people would just open their eyes and see, they could have, you have one of the most conservative Supreme Courts that we've had probably in the last 40 to 50 years, and abortion is still legal? I can't believe that the pro-choice movement has that many lobbyists on staff. I can't believe it. It's because they don't want to do it.
Yeah.
All right, well, I extended the show's time so we can get a little bit more of this talk in. You know, I'm just reading some of the stuff in the chat room. It says they pick sides and don't look at facts. So she cloisters, her daughter away. I would not do that to my daughter, but she's with child and not an alcoholic. I got to go eat. My blood sugar is dropping. Yeah, we're getting ready to wind down the show. This is the reason why I feel like she should cloister her daughter away, because she's on stage saying that they want to pull money away from family planning clinics. Her daughter is going to be all right, but they're pulling money away from family planning clinics where women can get responsible contraceptives, where they don't end up being a teenage unwed mother. And I think it is, she should be embarrassed because she's on a platform saying we need to watch our children, I'm a hockey mom, pay attention to your kids. But your daughter is getting screwed and the guy's putting on his Facebook page that he doesn't want kids and this and that. I mean, this is really laughable. It's really laughable. It's really laughable. It's like a preacher, a prominent preacher. There's one prominent preacher right now who will not speak out against homosexuality from the pulpit because one of his sons is flaming pink. He'll talk about everything else but won't talk about or address homosexuality because it's happening in his own house. And he knows the minute he starts speaking out against homosexuality, they're going to look right to his kids. And the same standard applies to her. How are you going to get out there and talk about teen pregnancy and the family and your daughter's knocked up? Come on now. And you're parading your 5-month-old you know, infant around. I don't know. Let's pick this up again next Thursday. Are you going to be with us next Thursday?
Yeah.
I love when you do that. Everybody, thanks for listening. I extended the show just to get our final thoughts out. Do me a favor, everybody. Read up a little bit more on this whole thing with Barack and learn about it. And I'm going to post some stuff up. Actually, my new book, Politics Remix, is coming out Tuesday. I just got an email that the cover and stuff is ready. But I really want us to understand the only way we can maneuver through this maze called life and through this political season, now that discussing politics is in vogue, is if we all have a basic understanding of the Constitution, the Emancipation Proclamation, the Bill of Rights, the Voter Rights Act of 1965, women's suffrage, and all of these things. We can't walk around ignorant and ill-informed anymore. Anyway, I love you all. Dee, you're the best. Thank you so much for coming on and giving me an hour of your time every single Thursday. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. And you know what? I'm actually going to listen to this show again right now because I have to go back and take notes. Just remember that the light of God surrounds us, the love of God enfolds us, the power of God protects us, the presence of God watches over us. Wherever I am, God is, and wherever you are, God is. Thank you, everybody. And Biomed, thank you for saying, yes, Sai, you go, girl, because you know anything I say was not directed to hurt your feelings. We're having spirited conversation. Bye, everybody. Dee, thanks a lot, and we'll talk later.
Follow.
Bye.